Hi everyone, my name is Mpochi Thapi and welcome to TCS Plus, the business technology show where we shine a spotlight on thinkers, builders and innovators shaping the landscape around ICT in South Africa. Today's conversation is brought to you by Accelera Digital Group, and I'm joined in studio by Cliff DeWitt, their Group Chief Innovation Officer. Good morning, Cliff, and it's great to have you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. It's really nice to be here.
Wonderful. Now, before we get into it, I just want to set the scene a bit about what we're going to be discussing today. Right now, cloud adoption is really the foundation of digital transformation in Africa, and it's what makes real AI innovation possible. So today, we'll be talking about what is holding businesses back, what can leaders do to eliminate the drag, and how the C-suite should be thinking differently about moving faster towards AI. Yeah. We'll also touch a little bit on AI-ready data foundations and what that actually looks like, and where companies should start. Because ultimately, everyone wants real returns from AI. And that's exactly where ADG helps bridge that readiness gap.
Exactly.
But before we start, I'd really just like to understand a little bit about you, Cliff. Where are you from? How did you get to Accelera Digital Group? If you can just take us through your journey.
Yeah, thanks. I guess I've been in the industry for almost 30 years now. I'm an electrical engineer by training. I wandered into banking very soon in my career, actually similar place to where you are at the moment. So I created or helped create one of the first internet banking sites in the world way back in the early 2000s. Oh. Then I joined Microsoft. So I spent a large part of my career at Microsoft, almost 18 years. And then I decided to take my hand at joining a startup and built a company. We learned a lot of interesting lessons. Mm. And up until recently, I was the CTO at Netstar, one of the Altron Group companies. Sort of spent a bit of time on the customer side. So it's always nice to spend time selling, but you'll see I've sort of chosen both sides of the fence. And I think it keeps you rounded to sort of spend time on both the selling side and on the customer side. So I spent 3 and a bit years there. And then recently I joined ADG to look after the innovation portfolio. And I'm also the MD of the South Africa business. So it's an interesting journey, again, being back on sort of the consulting sales side of the business.
Very interesting journey indeed, and very well-rounded, as you said. You've got both perspectives. You know, you can anticipate the client needs and also come up with solutions to solve them. So that sounds like a really colorful past ahead, Cliff.
It has been.
Right. So, yeah, let's dive right in. And I'd really like to start with why you believe cloud adoption is the backbone of digital transformation in South Africa, in Africa, sorry, more generally, and what the link is between cloud adoption and enabling innovation in Africa.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, right? And I was part of the team that sort of wrote the original business case for Microsoft to bring cloud to South Africa, to Africa, with the first data center on the continent. Subsequently, of course, all the big hyperscalers are here. AWS is here. Google is here recently. And I think the core thing for me is that it really democratizes the access to computing. Mm. Now, I always like to tell the story of when electricity was invented. Yes. You know, it was a very sought after capability, and only the rich and powerful factories had access to it. And then after time, it was democratized by utilities. And this is why we have Eskom today, right? And that same sort of story happens with cloud computing. Yes. In the early days of computing, it was really the domain of very big organizations who could afford to build big data centers. Mm. If you were young and innovative, that cost barrier to get into computing was very high. Yes. And I think what cloud really does is it brings that barrier down. So you can be a startup with an idea and have access to cloud. You can be a large enterprise and have access to world-class technology. So I believe it really is that thing that gives us access to computing at a very large scale or a very small scale, and becomes that incubation area for innovation in many respects. Mm. If you also, like, let's zoom in a little bit on what's happening with AI.
Yeah.
I mean, AI is in many ways this transformative technology. I'm going to talk a little bit more about it. Mm. But the barrier to entry there is quite cost prohibitive. I mean, NVIDIA are selling their GPUs now for several hundreds of thousands of dollars, right?
Sure.
So if you're an innovative small African company wanting to do something, very hard to get access to those if you have to buy one of those yourself. But if you want to get fractional access to it for a while and to prove your point, prove your technology and scale over time, I think that's the benefit of cloud in many respects. The second thing is often just speed of rollout, if I can use those words, right? Because there's so much capability there, many organizations would take weeks, months, sometimes years to add capacity to their data centers and to scale, or to scale up and to scale down. Now with cloud, because it's a shared resource, you can get access to it, you can use more of it very quickly, use less of it very quickly. So that nimbleness that allows you to move very quickly is also a really big thing, I think, around cloud computing.
Sure, yeah. So it is an equalizer for innovation, basically.
Exactly, and very nice word.
In the hands of the right innovators, I mean,
it's exactly.
The opportunities are limitless.
Yeah, exactly.
I really like that.
Yeah, that's the way I think about it.
And so that brings me to my next point. What do you feel is the organizational drag that might be hindering organizations from jumping on this innovation bandwagon?
Yeah. Yeah, and I suppose it's in some ways this drag concept is becoming more prolific with the advent of AI. Mm. And I think about it in sort of two areas. The first is I always like to go to the people process, people change management piece first. I think especially with AI in cloud, there's this fear that AI is going to take my job, right?
Definitely.
And I think that fear then permeates into how people think about using AI, using it in productive ways in their work life specifically. Mm-hmm. We see a slightly different pattern in people's consumer life. So if you just look at how well many of the AI chatbots have done, many of the AI agents, GPT, Gemini in the Google case, that adoption has flown really quickly. And you speak to many people, you know, if you're having a dinner table conversation, they've always, all of them got it on their phones and use it for certain things. Mm. But when you talk to them in the work world, often they're like, no.
Very.
They're very guarded. So I think there is this kind of gap in terms of people being curious enough to learn how these tools can be used in their work life. It's changing, but there is certainly that barrier. And again, I think there's a twofold piece there. There's the organization's ability to provide people with the tooling and show them how to use it. And then there's the willingness to learn. So, you know, we had an interesting meeting the other day with a marketing department talking about some amazing AI tooling that you can use in marketing these days for image generation and, you know, even campaign management and measurement. And the head of marketing said to us, yeah, we looked at the tools about 5 years ago. It wasn't great, so we haven't looked at it since.
So much has changed in 5 years.
This was super interesting for me.
Wow, yeah.
The second bit I kind of alluded to is the sort of technology drag, right? I think often, and here I'm putting my sort of CIO, CTO hat on, many African organizations are really just battling to make sure that they keep the lights on in terms of the technology stack. You know, that old rule of sort of 70 to 80% of your IT spend gets spent on running the place, keeping the place running, is often very true, which leaves very little room for innovation and growth.
Yeah.
But then you said it just now, look at how fast this AI world is kind of moving. So I think this drag, this headwind hits you when all of this amazing new stuff is happening, but your own organization isn't really tooled in terms of your people's capacity, your systems where you store your data to actually use this new technology. And then you kind of get left further and further and further behind as the innovation runs ahead of you. That's kind of the way I think about it.
Yeah. I certainly think organizations are now understanding that a fearful hands-off approach is going to put them on the back foot. And I think we're seeing more organizations sort of warming up to it. As before, it was don't touch the AI.
Yeah.
Now it's how do we help our employees use it responsibly?
Yeah.
And what has your experience been in terms of regulatory barriers or risk or legal issues that might come up around it? Do you feel that those might also serve as hindrances to the adoption?
Yeah, I think there definitely is. It's a fascinating subject because I think, as with all sort of newer technology, the tech tends to run much faster than the regulatory frameworks are able to come and create proper regulatory and compliance guidelines behind it. So I think we're kind of moving out of that era a little bit because certainly some of the regulators are catching up. There are some governance rules that are getting set in place. And of course, as companies learn the expensive lessons of not having guardrails in place, they themselves are starting to provide their own regulatory frameworks to protect it.
Absolutely.
I do feel that, look, obviously there, that slows the pace down in certain cases, but it's a necessary slow in many cases, right?
Yes.
I think you cannot be cavalier with your customers' data in the public domain. Mm-hmm. And I think, of course, we have Poppy in South Africa that governs privacy. Many of these rules you'll fall foul of if you're just too cavalier with this technology. But I think sometimes, honestly, organizations also use the governance as an excuse not to innovate and run fast enough. And certainly, you know, there's some good data now that's showing, there's an AI report that Google has recently produced that talks about early adopters and how many of them are gaining large competitive advantages out of being bold enough to use this product, these products and this technology in the environments. And, you know, they're citing, you know, multi-digit performance gains for things like support staff, for things like operational people, for call centers. So I think in many cases, as I said, people use it as an excuse, but there's certainly an advantage to using it and being bold enough to use it within the right regulatory and guideline frameworks.
I definitely agree. I think we're getting there. And a quick fire question.
Yeah.
Do you think the US is getting it right with the regulation or the EU, which is quite heavy-handed?
Yeah.
Do you think we should be doing in an African context?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It's a really good question. And you always see the contrast between the two, with the Europeans being a lot more conservative, the Americans kind of favoring innovation and like saying, well, let's just see how it plays out. Honestly, for our context right now, I'm in favor more of the put less guardrails in place right now. Again, I think our Poppy guidelines are well constructed. Yes. I think we have a nice regulatory framework, and certainly in terms of privacy. I don't think we should be over-regulatory in this environment. And even if you look at sort of maybe the interesting approach now is sort of what's happening with Apple at the moment, where they were quite conservative in their use of AI, and they're talking about kind of basing or favoring privacy to the end. And if you look at how they're starting to be overtaken now by, I mean, I think I read a report this morning that their head of AI just recently stepped down. Because they're falling so far behind the competition. That's to me a nice example of sort of how I think in an innovative era, you need less guardrails and a little bit more sort of innovation to drive the regulatory framework.
Yes, an overly cautious approach might be a disadvantage. And 100%. I think our unique position is that because we're not so regulated at the moment, we can partner with policymakers to actually define the frameworks. Exactly. And companies are in a unique position to actually determine what governance looks like within their specific sectors. And I really like that.
Yeah.
And
that
brings me...
That's a great point, that.
Yeah, yeah. And it brings me to my next question. I know ADG is working on some AI assessments, and how does this sort of help organizations test where they are on you know, the continuum of readiness?
Yeah, we basically sort of saw this need in the market where it would be really nice for organizations to have sort of a benchmark assessment, and there's a good couple of them, but we wanted something that kind of reflected the African context where we operate. So we've built this AI assessment tool. And really, it's a simple set of questions that we ask people to fill in, and we'll give them a score of where they fit. A very high level at the beginning, just to give them, and we're making it free, publicly available on our website. So if you're keen to go, and you can go and check it out on our website, www.adg.io.
Okay.
But I guess the other reason we're doing this is it also is going to allow us to build a picture of what the general AI readiness is through our continent in certain areas and in certain sectors. And so our hope is that as we sort of have more people filling out their survey, we'll be able to then provide some insight, looking at the data, to provide some insight on the readiness in general of the market in certain sectors across the continent in different countries. And I think this will help companies then benchmark themselves against their peers, against their competition. And we hope that we can help our customers sort of give them an objective view of where they find themselves, also where they desire to be, and then build a bridge on how we transfer them from kind of their current state into their future state.
Awesome. Thank you. And I'd like us to transition now to the C-suite's role. And because, you know, they are really the champions and the pioneers that 100%. Hold all this influence when it comes to adoption. How should they be thinking about their operating models to accelerate AI adoption?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I love that you went there to the C-suite, because I think it does all start there, right?
Mm-hmm.
We see in companies, and again, I'll refer to that report that Google did, is companies that are successful with their AI strategy have deep sponsorship at the C-suite level.
Yes.
Often the CEO, not even sort of some of the other CXs or CIOs or CTs, often the CIO. And if you think about the conversation we've happened till now, if a large part of this is people change management,
yes.
I think having a C-suite that is supportive demonstrates that they understand this and helps people through their transition is essential.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we were talking a little bit about this earlier as well. I think that suite also manages up to the board and down
to the organization.
Mm-hmm. So having that link is also important, because we shouldn't forget that in many cases, boards are also somewhat fearful, don't quite understand this.
Exactly. Risk averse.
100%. Mm-hmm. And I think that sponsorship is really, really important to take the employees through that journey. The other bit that we talked about previously is also the sort of technical sponsorship. So often it's also the C-suite's ability to unlock some budget to be able to do this. And actually, we've learned some interesting lessons along the way as ADG doing this as well. So when we come into an organization that wants to make use of technology, this kind of technology in a transformative way, but doesn't really know how, and it's funny how often we have that conversation. So there's a desire, but the fear manifests itself in, I want to do it, but I don't know how to do it in a safe way, in a calculated way, in a process or a methodical way. What we try and often do is find use cases in the organization, work with that C-suite in a sort of a design think way to unlock some challenges that they may have that could be solved with AI. And we try and do things that are high impact but low cost, just to start with. And we often find that those use cases are about enabling the employees of the organization. So sometimes it's quite dangerous if you're just getting into this kind of technology, if you're starting to use AI, to go directly to your customers.
Yeah.
What you want to do is start by
show its value internally.
100%. Get your employees comfortable with it. Get them to understand that a bot can make their lives better, because it gives them instant answers to questions that they might spend 15, 20 minutes going to look up in a wiki. Get them to understand that if you're a call center agent and you have a bot that assists you, that may provide the answer to the person in a much more seamless way, which leaves you to solve those complex problems.
Absolutely.
And when you start doing things like that, you sort of light the spark that allows AI to then start delivering value in a bigger way inside an organization. So that's what we try and do when we have these conversations.
That's such a great strategy, because you rake up your wins, and when you develop that confidence internally as an organization, it's so much easier to then roll it out to and add value to your clients.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that seems to be a nice transition. Internal first and then external facing.
So what then should the C-suite be prioritizing as they're starting to think about this transformation? Should they look at talent acquisition first? Do they look at finding the right partner first? Or do they focus on their infrastructure and making that, you know, more modern or ready?
Yeah. The thing we often do, and it's interesting, is I think organizations like us often exist to sort of augment existing organizations. So I would say the first thing C-suite should think about is, what are the real problems that they have inside their organization?
Yeah.
And how do they start figuring out how many of those can be solved with this transformative technology? And it's amazing. We facilitate those conversations often. And I like to do that, because I like to start with the what we do the how. Many technology-focused organizations come in and just want to sell you technology stuff, right? Many
without
technologists
understanding your environment here.
Exactly. So we find that sort of if you prioritize that what and are clear with what's the problem that you're solving and how you're going to measure the efficacy of solving it through this technology, then you're really set up for success. Because AI has also got an interesting bad rep in some organizations, because as it sort of started, there were many organizations that said, we have to do AI. We don't know what, but everybody's doing AI, so we have to do AI jumping as well. And they sort of started an AI team, and that team didn't really have a mandate. They were kind of left there to go and do cool AI stuff.
Figured it out, yeah.
And then they looked at them 8 months later and said, well, what have you guys been doing? And they were like, well, we've been playing with it. So I think it's super important that you understand sort of what you're solving with this technology, yes, but also how you measure the return on investment once you've invested in building something. If you get those two measures right, then you get to stand up and say, we've solved this problem. Mm. It cost us this, and this is what it's made us, or this is what it's saved us. Then I think that the C-suite starts having a way to sponsor this property. Mm. Then I think once you have your hands sort of around the problem area,
yes,
organizations like ours can help you with the implementation, with can help you with the journey. Mm. Often we work alongside organizations with their people to bring them up to, level them up to understanding how this technology works. It, you know, then we can get deep into sort of, does their data estate support an AI environment? And we should probably talk a little bit about sort of the environment that's needed for this stuff. But I think if you start with the what and define the what really well and how you're going to measure the return, I think you put yourself in a very good state.
I like that. So don't just buy into the hype. Understand your problem first.
Correct.
And then partner right with the AI to solve it.
Correct.
That is good.
Yeah.
That is good. And we can move on now to foundations.
Yeah.
How do we build an AI-ready data foundation? And what does that look like within an African context?
Yeah.
Because we know we operate in a very unique context.
Yeah. Such a great question, you know, because we see this again. You know, once we move past that how phase into the what phase, this is where we start uncovering the foundational stuff. Mm. And again, kind of coming back to that earlier conversation we had, we find that many organizations are very legacy in their thinking about data, very legacy in their thinking about the value of data in some respects. So what we find often is that most organizations think about data as a rearview mirror. They have a data team normally.
Mm.
Normally that data team exists to create reports.
Yeah.
And those reports are normally given to all parts of the organization, a lot to the executives to show what has happened in an organization. What was our sales last month? How did this branch perform in the last month? You know, how much inventory did we draw down, et cetera, et cetera. There's millions of different reports for different. But if you kind of think about that, all of that data is really just operational. It's used to provide those reports.
Mm.
Very few organizations think about that data in terms of an asset for the organization. And sometimes even an asset they can monetize over and above just providing reports. And that changes the way you think about the data foundation for an organization.
True.
We also find that many organizations are very legacy in terms of how they've thought about this. So lots of that infrastructure often still sits on-premise, sits inside SQL servers, or you know, there's millions of different types of database technology. But if you kind of look at, again, how the cloud vendors have evolved and innovated here, there's some amazing sort of capabilities in the cloud. If you just take Google's BigQuery environment, for instance, that kind of they use to build and power their own environment. Mm. They sell as a product now.
Mm.
That kind of environment makes handling data, building machine learning models on top of data, querying data, so much easier than you would in a traditional environment.
Mm-hmm.
And so often when we get into this foundational work, the first piece of work that we do, sort of looking at people's data estates and looking at how they handle and store and query data and modernize that into some type of cloud data warehouse.
Mm.
Once you have your data inside that infrastructure, it really becomes much, much easier to build things like predictive analytics models using machine learning on top of that, or to build out agents and chatbots on top of that environment.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's sort of how we like to think about that foundational piece. And it's really important you get it right, because it's sort of like a house of cards. If you don't get that foundational piece right, you might be able to do these odd AI things, but it's not predicated on the right data model.
Mm.
The last thing I will add there is sort of this concept of lineage is sort of the term that we're using a lot now. Which is, think about it as your data security and policies. We kind of touched it on in the policy framework, but it's how you apply security to your data, how you understand where your data comes from and where your data is going to. And I'll tell a quick story about this, why it's so important.
Mm.
You know, I remember, I've been in this world for a little while now. I remember sort of when we started with computers, people would all have documents that store on their hard drives, or that might have a shared drive somewhere and store documents there.
Mm-hmm.
And then there'd be permissions. So I couldn't see the finance team's or the legal team's documents, right? And that kind of worked okay. Sometimes people would get commissions wrong, but it was hard to discover their documents.
Yeah.
And then we got this thing called enterprise search. And all of a sudden we had a search tool, just like a Google tool, but you had it inside your organization. And you could go to a search tool and say, I'm looking for a document about legal governance, right?
Mm.
And all of a sudden, this tool could search the entire document base of a company.
Mm.
And you could just see all these results, and you could click on one, and maybe you would get access to it. And that happened a lot when enterprise search came, and all of a sudden people realized, oops, now we've got something that can see all of our documents. We better be very careful.
What we put there.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of fast forward to today. We don't really have search so much anymore, but lots of people are building agentic interfaces on top of their knowledge stores.
Mm.
So I can go to an agent and say, can you tell me what my legal policy framework is for governance on financial regulation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it will open the document up,
and have a look.
Take the content out and give it back to you.
Oh, wow.
So this is why I think in this world of sort of AI, that data security is becoming paramount importance, because you're now not even securing documents, you're securing content within documents. And this is why this concept of lineage is so important the foundation, right?
Mm. And, you know, a number of things have come up for me as you've just been talking. It's the siloed nature of data in organizations at the moment, where we really don't know what the other department is doing.
Yeah.
But if we had that line of sight and AI could help us break some of those silos, we'd have so much more to offer, so much more insights. I think, as you were saying, the approach to data has very much been reporting, know, who needs to know what, instead of really thinking of it as the organization's superpower and getting it to become the organization's superpower.
It's such a fantastic point you make, right? Again, it's as we sort of transcend out of this backward-looking world, as this reporting world, one of the things that forward-looking organizations are doing is recognizing one thing AI is really good at and really is the basis for how it works is prediction. If you have large volumes, and you said it so well, if you have insight over your entire organization's data, again, with the right guardrails, you can make very interesting predictive analytics predictions based on the data that you have inside your organization. Mm. So instead of asking a human to say, how much should we order based on the sales forecast that has just come in? You can ask the AI to say, what do you think we should order in terms of inventory? Or what do you think the sales will be in 6 months' time on that branch? And the AI is really good at reasoning over lots of data, actually much better than the human brain, because it can see correlation and patterns in data.
Mm-hmm,
we wouldn't pick up.
Or it would take us 100 years to
exactly.
finally. Yeah.
So those super forward-looking organizations are starting to see there's value, A, just inside running your own organization for having a purview of your entire organization and having predictive analytics models.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, if you bold enough to go and provide that insight out to your customers.
Mm.
Sometimes really forward organizations are starting to value their data and monetize their data. So they're starting to say, well, we have a point of view here on property valuations, on a whole myriad of things.
Mm.
Why don't we start providing this as a service to some of our customers? And we, instead of just having this data as an internal asset that we're using to make decisions, we actually actively monetize this data. So I think that's where it's starting to go.
Data really is the new oil.
Exactly.
You know, when they coined that term a few years ago, I didn't quite see how it would come together, you know, big data. But now I'm really seeing what an absolute value data is and why organizations really need to protect and leverage it in the right way.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so what do you think are some of the common mistakes that organizations are making when preparing for AI?
Yeah, I think we sort of touched on it. Mm. But I think one of the big mistakes we see is sort of not really understanding the problem correctly and probably running into the solution quickly.
Mm.
And I'm all up for experimentation. So sometimes that's okay. Like, I think sometimes it's okay to run fast, experiment.
Mm.
But then make sure that you do the work after the fact to productionize your solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes we get involved in organizations that have run, experimented, put stuff in, and never taken the time to put the right guardrails in place, put the right production rules in place. And sometimes the discipline of producing, let's call it quality production solutions, is sort of missed in this AI world. And those kind of rules have been around for a really long time. And software developers know that there's a big difference between sort of developing something on your machine, moving it into test versus having it in production. So having the right measurements in place to see, you know, is it operating correctly? Do the support staff know how to support it? If it falls over, is there measurements and measures in place that give you insight into how it's running? Sometimes in this AI world, we see the cool kids run very fast and sort of forget some of these basic rules. That's sort of the one thing. I think the other thing to get right is sort of this people change process that we've sort of mentioned. Those are some of the mistakes that we've seen, is that you, again, it sounds like basics, but sometimes we relearn the same lessons over and over again, is prepare your people for the journey that you're embarking on. And that's sometimes as simple as, you know, taking people through training courses. Making sure that the organization knows what you're doing. I mean, I walked into, I'll name the company. I walked into the reception of Sasol the other day. And they had a really nice post in reception talking about the AI strategy and how people could come and understand more about it, whole advertorial almost for the employees. And I thought it was such a good idea to take people along on the journey of what they're thinking in terms of AI and how they're taking it to their people. So that's another interesting lesson that I think we've learned along the way. So a couple of different ones here.
Absolutely. I like that last one, because your strategy is only going to be as successful as the people who have to implement it. 100%. And if they don't understand it and they have unaddressed concerns and fears about it, how can it possibly be a success? And I think people are a key component in change management processes. And I think just even from the development of AI more broadly, you know, human beings are such complex beings. Just in the way that, you know, they develop an AI, the kind of things that you can systematize in an AI. I mean, that's where the whole bias concerns come in, is to say, who are the people that are firstly putting this technology in place? Are they okay? You know, from a leadership point of view, do they understand what they're doing? And then the people that need to adopt it, have they been prepared as well? We focus a lot on the technical aspects and the infrastructure, and we forget that the people are really the true champions of it. And let's move to a future outlook, or let's look at some success stories in the space. You know, could you share a success story of AI adoption within an African context, and perhaps something that demonstrates the tangible impact and scalability of AI?
Yeah, so I'll give you a couple. Maybe the first one, the one I like, it's a super simple story, but it's very powerful. We do a bunch of work for a large financial services institution. They're called Moneypoint, based out of Nigeria. Growing at an amazing, amazing rate, acquiring customers, crazy numbers. As they grow, one of the things that they're doing is they're innovating really quickly. So they're bringing new products and services into the market very fast. And we were working with their development team, and we noticed this interesting bottleneck in the process where they were sort of starting to run against the regulatory framework. So they were building products, but they weren't always sure whether those products were sound from a regulatory point of view. So what would happen is the product manager would then send a mail to the legal team and ask the legal team for an opinion on the features that they wanted to build. And that would take two, sometimes 3 weeks for them to work through. There's about 800 documents apparently that kind of govern this regulatory framework. And you understand this world very well.
That's why I'm chuckling.
Exactly. They would kind of look it up and say, yes, you can't do this, or yes, you can do this, right? We then said, oh, this is an interesting problem we could solve with an AI agent. So we ingested all of that 800 documents, and we trained it only on that set of regulatory information. So it's not trained on all of the stuff that is on the internet where there's a million opinions on everything.
It's closed off. Very controlled.
And we provided that back to the developers. And now they can provide a very specific question into the bot, and the agent will go and look up in the regulatory framework and will say, yes, you can do this, or no, you can't do this, based on this document, this document, this document. It'll provide references to it. So we kind of you still have the oversight of the legal team.
Yes.
But you now have very, very, very much more accelerated responses with the right sort of references to the actual documents based on what it thinks is that point of view. And so we kind of moved the decision time to build a feature from weeks to a matter of minutes in some cases. Sure. And that has amazing productivity gains, but also it allows them to run very quickly and produce features very quickly.
Yeah.
So it has a sort of an advantage for them in terms of how quickly they're able to react to market changes, et cetera. So that was a really interesting story.
I can tell you there's one less burnt out lawyer in the world for it. And I think that's a good enough success story as any.
Exactly.
But I really like that because a lot of the concerns that, you know, get raised sometimes with AI is that, you know, they hallucinate and they're not always so reliable. But I think what people forget is that you can train it and you can feed it data sets and have it function within, you know, the particular guardrails that you want to have in place. And, and I think that then makes it a game changer.
Yes.
And just out of interest, how important does it then become to still sort of check and verify that information, even where it has been shared in, you know, a very closed off regulated environment? You've fed it the laws and regulations that it should be looking at. Yeah. Is there still a deeper need for that human in the loop oversight?
You know, it depends. I find, and it's a great point you raise, because I think many of our concerns around AI are based on our consumer experience of AI. So we see the hallucinations when we put our consumer hat on, or when we just use a GPT or Gemini prompt, and we've actually probably the right training been trained to be somewhat skeptical of some of the answers. And I think that's a good basis, actually. We should always be skeptical. And in many cases, humans are skeptical by nature. We, even when another human provides you with advice, often many of us go, maybe, maybe not, right?
True.
You should have the same bias, the same skepticism when it comes to a machine giving you the answers. And maybe we've been trained that machines are always right, so we kind of lost that guard sometimes.
True.
But I think the hallucinations have taught us to have that.
Mm.
Coming back to your question, I think it depends on sort of the nature of the model. Now, what's starting to happen is that, use the example we've just used, is that sort of the next sort of wave, I think, of productivity comes from not just using generic off-the-shelf models supplied by the very big vendors, but building agents for your own specific use, trained with your own data, managed by your own IT team. And I, to me, that's the next wave of innovation that's coming, is that not just using AI as it is vanilla from somewhere on the west coast of the US, is to use that technology to train your own agents, your own bots, your own chat interfaces that understand your unique context. I think what happens when you do that is that the oversight requirement drops, not completely, but it drops, because now you're training it on a much reduced set. There is still a responsibility of the human to say, yeah, I kind of understand that. And, and if I think of my own personal interactions with when I work with my legal team, it's always a partnership. When the legal team provides an opinion to me, often we sit down and go, yeah, but did you understand the nuance of this? And you go, oh, okay, because you explained it like that, let's think about it like this. So I think just because a bot gives you the feedback, you as the developer manager, and if we run the scenario, still have a responsibility to look at the at the feedback and go, does that make sense? Should I include my legal team in this? Or actually, I read the regulatory paragraph. It makes perfect sense what it's saying. I definitely can't do this. I understand this. I don't need to go to legal. So I think that oversight is there.
Yeah.
But I think the requirement for oversight is dropping as the models get more and more specific around the domains that they operate in.
I like that. So how does a fully fledged, well-developed organization partner with that AI and use it to sort of propel it forward?
Exactly. Exactly.
Awesome. And if we forget everything that you told us here today, Cliff, what is that one key takeaway that you want our listeners to hold on to?
Yeah, I think the core for me, the core lesson of doing this for a couple of years now is that I think people are key to this transformation. I think technologies are always going to be transformative. I think stuff like this, yes, it is highly transformative at the moment, and there is a high wave that's cresting, but never forget to take your people with on the journey, both on the training and enablement side, but also for me specifically in the African context, is that I'm really passionate about us not just being consumers of the technology, but producers. And I think if we invest in our people in terms of readiness, technical capability, to be able to understand it and produce our own solutions, those are really important for me. So our people is, at the end of this, the most important thing to get right.
I love that. The people. Yep. The people are the ones that really train the technology, build it, and are able to make the lasting impact. 100%. I think the technology should always remain the partner that enhances, you know, whatever the innovation is that's coming from the people. And that really resonates with me.
Exactly.
Wonderful. Cool. Thank you so much, Cliff. It has been a very good discussion. I've taken away a few golden nuggets for myself, and I hope some of our listeners have as well. And I really hope we can do this again soon.
Thank you. Thank you for the time. It's great talking to you.